You're listening to The Nancy Skinner Show. The Tom Hartman Show is next on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. President Bush will now meet with Israeli and Palestinian leaders in Jordan during an upcoming visit to the Middle East. The scheduled talks just the latest effort by the United States to push its most recent plan for peace in the region. The president is scheduled to travel to the Red Sea resort town of Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt after he attends the Group of Eight summit in France this week. The White House says he will also stop in Qatar to visit U.S. Military Central Command headquarters. That Middle East visit is scheduled from June 2nd to June 5th. Police investigating the suicide bomb attacks in the Saudi capital of Riyadh 2 weeks ago have now arrested five suspects. Those three separate attacks on residential compounds killed 34 people May 12th. The latest on the story now from correspondent Suzanne Chislett.
The alleged mastermind of the attack, Ali Abdul Rahman Al-Ghandi, is reportedly among the detainees. The five men were apparently seized in the holy city of Medina over the past few days. Both the American and Saudi governments have blamed Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda network for the Riyadh attacks. Four men suspected of involvement were detained last week. The country's interior minister said they were among 19 suspected Al-Qaeda members identified earlier in May. Suzanne Chislett reporting.
The human rights watchdog group Amnesty International says the United States-led war on terrorism has made the world a more dangerous place overall. The group's Secretary General Irene Khan says there's been a massive increase in human rights abuses since the September 11th attacks, even right here in the United States.
What would have been unacceptable on the 10th of September 2001 is now becoming almost a norm. What would have been an outrage in Western countries during the Cold War? Torture, detention without trial, truncated justice is readily accepted in some countries today for some people.
In its annual report being released today, Amnesty International accused the United States of ignoring most international law and human rights regulations by still detaining prisoners from the Afghanistan war at Guantanamo Bay.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief, Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue, without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen. We're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Suspected serial killer Derek Todd Lee will now be returned to Louisiana from Georgia to face murder charges. Lee was arrested last night near an Atlanta tire store and waived extradition during a court hearing earlier today. He's a suspect in the murders of five women so far during an 18-month period, and he's been charged already in one of the killings. A judge will rule by the end of the week on releasing autopsy and warrant details in the case of the murder of Lacey Peterson and her unborn son. Both the prosecution and lawyers for husband Scott Peterson, who's charged in the death, argued yesterday release of the documents would hinder the investigation and could result in harmful pretrial publicity.
Dry, rough, and scaly. You've tried everything without results, but you haven't tried Carousel. Carousel with a K, a podiatrist's choice for years, now available in your store's foot care section. Carousel is dual-acting, an exfoliating moisturizer that gently removes dead skin while it moisturizes new cell layers underneath. Your feet will feel softer, smoother in just days. No wonder 9 out of 10 people choose Carousel over the product they usually use. Try Carousel. It's everything your feet need.
The tension continues to mount on the Korean Peninsula as diplomats fail to agree on the appropriate format for continued talks between North Korea and other regional players on Pyongyang's suspected nuclear program. More from correspondent Celia Hatton.
According to the South Korean envoy to the U.S., U.S. diplomats are ready to sit down at the negotiating table again with North Korea, but only in a multilateral setting. Ambassador Han Sung-joo told the Reuters news agency that the U.S. would be prepared to negotiate an end to North Korea's budding nuclear weapons program in talks that include other regional players. Pyongyang has stated its intention to hold multilateral talks with Japan and South Korea only after unilateral negotiations with the United States. The pressure remains for diplomats from all countries to find a solution. South Korean officials have announced that Seoul will delay shipments of aid to the impoverished North if Pyongyang continues to raise tensions in the Korean Peninsula. Celia Hatton, Beijing.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Ah, running whitewater rapids. What a thrilling spring sport. In a raft. But in a car, it's a ride that may literally take your breath away. When I come back, I'll bail you out.
Doug is frugal.
Well, money doesn't grow on trees, you know.
The problem is, Doug is about to buy a used car.
Yep, and I'm going to get ripped off!
And Doug doesn't know about Carfax, which lets you check a used car's history to see if it's been in an accident, has accurate mileage, stuff like that. So you know your money's well spent.
So I might save thousands?
Exactly, Doug. Just go to CARFAX.com or ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report.
Hey, how about we go halvesies on the car?
How about nunsies?
How about sumsies?
No. Carfax, the truth about used cars.
No one intentionally confuses cars for recreational rafts. But if you find yourself in a stream of late-melting snows or heavy spring rains, remember the kid's toy, a pogo stick. P-O-G-O. P, pop seat belts. After you go in water, because they protect you on impact. O, open the window quickly, especially if you have power windows. G-O, get out. No explanation necessary. So make sure your whitewater adventure is with a guide and a paddle. Heed warnings of washed out roads. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And hello, welcome to the program. Speaking to you on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting coast to coast on terrestrial stations from outer space on the Sirius satellite, channel 145, and broadcasting on the internet live on IEAmericaRadio.com. This is the Tom Hartman program, bringing you uncommon sense from the radical middle. In our first hour today, we're going to talk about the conservative takeover and the end of democracy. In our second hour, we're going to talk about the death penalty and its consequences for modern society and democracy. And we've got some tips from the news and comments from our listeners. And in our chat room right now, there's already a few folks who are having a lively discussion. If you want to get to it, it's tomhartman.com on the internet. And then just click on the chat room link. Actually, click on the link that takes you to the radio program. And then click on the link that says chat room, and that will take you in there. The real neoconservative agenda, the neocons are sort of the leocons, many are calling them the Strauss advocates. We're going to cover that a little later in the week. But the conservatives in general, the conservative viewpoint, as it's being presented in America in 2003, it's a very different viewpoint than conservatives were presenting in, say, 1964 or 1950. It's a very different agenda. In fact, it's one that I am convinced Dwight Eisenhower and Barry Goldwater would repudiate and run from. Although there are some areas of commonality, it has this worldview has deep roots. It goes back to Alexander Hamilton and John Adams. It goes actually beyond that. It goes all the way back to the beginning of what we call modern civilization, with the idea that it is right and appropriate that there should be a ruling elite, an exclusive class that knows better for us how things should be done than we ourselves do. Although it's rarely stated out loud, and in fact, conservative commentators love to say that that's the agenda of liberals, that, you know, the big government taking care of you, big brother, we know better than you do. In fact, it is the core, the explicit core of the conservative agenda. The idea that if there is less government, there will be more dominance by this class, this elite class, this wealthy class, that is the rightful heirs, the rightful owners of governance and government. By the way, if you'd like to be on the program today, you can call 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, any old time. Our question in this hour, will the conservative takeover mean the end of democracy? As an example of this, consider the health care debate, the great health care debate that happened back during the Clinton administration. Bill Clinton had suggested a program that was far more modest than any of those being presented by the Democrats today. It was a program that probably would have cost $20 to $25, maybe $30 billion a year, a fraction of the tax cut that was just passed. The majority of Americans were overtly in favor of this. The early opinion polls showed 60-70% enthusiasm, not just, yes, I'm in favor, but enthusiasm for the government stepping in and providing health care to those people who didn't have the ability or access to buy insurance or be covered. The reason was fairly straightforward and twofold. One, people were acting in their own self-interest. There were people who were saying, yes, this would be a good thing. This, you know, I'd like that. Now, you could argue that those folks should be discounted because people could step up and say, you know, I'd like some of that government cash that's being handed out. For example, the Pentagon has misplaced $1 trillion. They are open about it. This is not, you know, some propaganda statement. You know, the Pentagon has lost $1 trillion. That's enough to run a lottery in the United States where we would have million-dollar winners and we could have a million winners, one out of every 100 workers in the United States. Just lost my train of thought there. Oh, so the point is that the Clinton's health care proposal was such a small piece of the $1 trillion that the Pentagon has lost, of the $350 billion that everybody now, even the conservatives, even the, you know, Tom DeLay today said they're going to make this an $800 million tax cut by not sunsetting the provisions that have sunsets built into them. So we've got this $800 billion tax cut. Clinton was proposing a $20-25 billion, well, you could say, okay, over 10 years, $250 billion health care program. And, yeah, okay, there were some folks who were saying, yes, I'd like a piece of that pie. Well, there are all kinds of folks saying, I want a piece of that pie. Corporate welfare is the largest form of welfare that the government passes out. Over $100 billion a year in direct grants and cash to corporations. Fewer than $14 billion a year to individuals. So, yeah, there are a lot of people who have their hand out, and all of those hands out probably should be looked at with a jaundiced eye. But then there were those... The more cogent argument, I think, was being made by people who said, if people in our society are healthy, if we have a baseline of health, we'll have a more competent workforce, we'll have a better quality of life. If we're not constantly dealing with insurance companies, I don't know how it works with you, but every time we or one of our children has a claim with the health insurance company, the insurance company automatically refuses to pay it. And then we have to prove to them that it was a legitimate claim. And then we've got one going on now where we're in the third iteration of they're saying that they haven't received the documentation that we keep sending them. This is, from many people I talk to, not at all uncommon. The insurance companies are doing everything they can to avoid making payments because their prime directive is not to provide health care. It's to provide profits to their stockholders. It's a very simple equation. And so what many people suggest in every developed country, in every industrialized country in the world, except for the United States, what the consensus has been, you know, if we make sure that everybody is insured, then we're, number one, going to save money on health care because we're going to be catching things before they become disasters. We're going to be catching things while they're cheap and small before they become large and disastrous, number one. Number two, we're going to have people who can direct their efforts towards doing their work or enjoying their lives without spending hours every week dealing with healthcare providers, insurance companies. Our doctors aren't going to have to spend all their time filling out paperwork and on and on and on. So, anyhow, the conservatives rose up against Bill Clinton's healthcare plan with these Harry and Louise ads in which they said, oh, you don't want that because then the government will be choosing who your doctor's going to be. Now, I think if you were to ask most Americans, do you want a government bureaucrat choosing your doctor? Most people would say no. But the real question was never asked. The real question is, would you rather have a government bureaucrat who is responsive to an elected official who has to be responsive to we the people making decisions about your health care, or would you rather have a corporate bureaucrat who is responsive to the needs of their CEO for profits and their directors and their stockholders for profits making the decisions about your health care? Which of these two? This gets at the heart of the issue here. Where does power happen? And the conservative worldview suggests that power should be in the hands of a wealthy elite. Our questions are, will the conservative takeover mean the end of democracy? The liberal answer to that, if I may speak for liberals, would be that government is a necessary evil to constrain those who would seek power over we the people. And that in a democracy or in a democratic republic, government is a particularly important and useful tool to constrain those forces that would hinder democracy or hinder the pursuit of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because it's responsive to we the people. You can make a very good argument for big government being bad in a dictatorship. No, nobody's going to argue with that. But when government is of, by, and for the people, when it derives its legitimacy from its voters, it's a whole different thing. So we have this situation in America where Medicare, every $100 spent on Medicare, $2 to $3 sticks to the fingers of the administration. That's the cost to administer Medicare. Whereas with private health insurance, the insurance companies and HMOs keep anywhere between $10 and $24 of every $100. Now, they're still delivering health care for $3 per 100, 3%. But they're keeping up to $24 per $100 because they have to pay profits, they have to pay for advertising, they have to pay millions of dollars in lobbying and campaign contributions to congressmen and senators and the president in order to defend their profit, their profit cow. They have corporate jets, they've got fancy headquarters, they've got corporate limousines, they've got CEOs who are consistently making millions of dollars. So the dirty little secret of the conservatives that they won't talk about when they say we should have less government is that when there is a vacuum, it will always be filled by something. That when you have something like the commons of a nation as large and as wealthy as the United States of America, the soil, the air, our national parks, our water, our health care systems, our communication systems, our airwaves, when you have something that is as extraordinarily rich and diverse and broad as the commons of the United States, if government doesn't administer those things, which we hold in common, somebody else will. So the question ultimately is, do we want our commons to be administered by we the people through our elected representative government in a democratic republic? Or do we want the government to get out of the way and allow for-profit corporations or wealthy individuals to administer those commons? And the conservative answer is clearly the latter, and the progressive or liberal answer is clearly the former. And I would suggest to you that the real progressive agenda, when Grover Norquist says that his goal is to drown government in a bathtub, that the clear and real government agenda is to destroy democracy, a conservative agenda is to destroy a democracy in the United States and replace it with an authoritarian feudalism, a new form of feudalism. Stay with the Tom Hartman program. We'll return in just a few moments.
What happened to those sandpaper feet? They're so soft now. Went to the podiatrist, huh?
No, I used Carousel. I got it at the store in the foot care section.
Carousel?
Yeah, K-E-R-A-S-A-L.
Carousel, used and dispensed by podiatrists for years, gently exfoliates and moisturizes dry, rough, scaly feet in just days. Preferred by 9 out of 10 over the products they usually use.
Maybe I should use Carousel, too.
You know, I was going to say something.
Hey, Carousel. It's everything your feet need.
Where will you be the next time your allergy strikes? Inside? Outside? In your car? Now you can take non-drowsy allergy medicine right when you need it. Announcing quick-dissolving Allivert. It starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue without water. Allivert is prescription-strength, non-drowsy, 24-hour relief. Even Claritin can't beat. New quick-dissolving Allivert. Allergy medicine right when you need it? Wherever you are. Use as directed.
Do you want to own a computer but have less than perfect credit, bad credit, no credit? No problem. If you have a checking or savings account and can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved. Guaranteed. You heard right. You're approved for a brand new name brand computer. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now. If you can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, you're already approved. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now and tell us where you want your brand new name brand computer delivered. If you can afford $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, your brand new state-of-the-art PC will be on its way. Guaranteed. Bad credit, no problem. Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved for the computer of your dreams. Guaranteed. Call right now, 1-800-823-0157.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Program. If you'd like to be on the program today, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Edward R. Murrow provides our quote for the day. He said, "We must not confuse dissent with disloyalty. When the loyal opposition dies, I think the soul of America dies with it." Brilliant comment from Edward R. Murrow, one of America's most famous and most articulate and insightful commentators and reporters, news reporters. Ironically, the conservative agenda, which says make government smaller, get government out of the way, also says get government in people's bedrooms, get government in their churches, get government. Let's put up free speech zones and take protesters and put them in cages near wherever the president's speaking, so that he can't hear their protests. Let's create huge databases on we the people and track people. Now, why would this be the case? Why would a group who is so strongly opposed to big government be creating big government? Well, I think that there are two things at work here. I think one is that there is a particular mindset associated with some in the conservative movement, and this is not all. I really don't think that, for example, William F. Buckley epitomizes this mindset, but I do think that most of your right-wing commentators embrace it, are derived from it, are classic examples of it, however you'd want to say it, and that is a mindset that is essentially fearful of other people, that assumes that people are evil and that they will always act out their evil given a chance, and that the job of government is to tightly constrain people, to tie them up with a belt, to hold them down with rope, to sit on their heads, to whatever it takes to keep them from expressing themselves or being dangerous or becoming dangerous. There's a visceral fear of anarchy on the right. And in some cases, it's entirely justified. There are dangerous people out there, and there are dangerous situations. But in most cases, most studies of Americans' perception of the danger that they live in as they live their lives versus the reality of the dangers in our lives show that life really isn't all that dangerous. So why are these folks? The second reason why the conservatives are all in favor of bigger government in this area is because it's not just bigger government. The war on drugs, for example, pumps over $1 billion a year, $1,000 million a year into private corporate coffers. Companies that make drug testing kits where you've got 6 or 8 cents worth of chemicals that they sell for $20 or $30. Companies that one of the three fastest growing industries in the United States right now, one of the few truly profitable industries, the only industry that one of two industries in the United States that is actually building buildings aggressively is the private prison industry. This is a major growth industry, and these people donate lots of money to politicians. They're very politically active. When Jeb Bush cut a deal with Enron to privatize the Everglades, it worked out well for Enron. It made profit for Enron, or it would have had it finished. It's still, I think that deal is still on the books, so they will proceed once Enron gets their act together. And it helped out Jeb Bush because Enron gave him a lot of money. Back in the old days, we used to call this bribery. Now it's called campaign contributions. Very strange situation here. Is the conservative takeover spelling the end of democracy? We're going to get into what what John Adams and Alexander Hamilton thought about all this when we come back after the break. Stick around. We'll return soon. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where we still honor we the people.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Laura Miller.
More labor strife in France as nearly a half million workers, including teachers, bank employees, staff at the Postal Service, and workers at state-run France Telecom, went on strike again yesterday over government plans to reform the national pension system. Last week, a larger, more broad-based strike all but shut the country down, but since then, many of France's unions have come to terms with a slightly revised plan. Others have not. And they say they'll keep the pressure on as a run-up to a mass demonstration in Paris planned for Sunday.
Tropicana, the way Las Vegas was meant to be.
It's one of the oldest casinos on the Strip in Las Vegas, but union workers at the Tropicana Hotel are betting their employer won't be around much longer. The Tropicana is no longer booking conventions beyond May of 2004, leading many workers to speculate that hotel managers are preparing to demolish the casino to make way for a new development. As a result, Tropicana employees want a guarantee that they'll be the first to be hired if a new resort is built on the old site. And until they win such an agreement, they warn that picket lines and work stoppages may be imminent. The Tropicana's 1,200 union employees were the only such workers in Las Vegas left without a contract last year when the city's powerful culinary union won a new contract from every other resort and casino.
Government workers in South Korea are lobbying hard for the right to form a union, and the government seems keen to the idea with one catch. Government employees will be prohibited from going on strike. But the workers, many of whom think forming a union without the right to strike leaves them powerless, may walk off the job before they get permission to. The union-to-be, which already has more than 100,000 members, says it began a strike ballot this week, and the results should be known before the end of the month.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of being yelled at, preached at, lectured to, demagogued, ridiculed, moralized, proselytized, and abused? Why don't you try something new? Join me, Nancy Skinner, on IE America Radio Network, where we can discuss the issues of the day from a whole new and healthier perspective. Nobody gets fed to the lions. Everybody has a right to their opinions. And the best thing is you walk away feeling better about life.
That's Nancy Skinner's Radio Vox Pop. Weekdays from 10 to noon Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
Tired of the same old conservative blather on talk radio? Want a different slant on politics in the world than what's offered up by right-wing wacko talk show hosts? Then join me, Peter Werby, 2 to 5 p.m. It's my new time, that's Eastern Time, weekdays, for an alternative not often heard on the AM band. If you want to hear a talk show host that opposes Bush's wars, challenges corporate rule, defends the interests of working people, the environment, and a woman's right to choose, then join me, Peter Werby, in my new time slot, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Kathy, I'm lost, I said, though I knew she was sleeping. I'm empty and aching, and I don't know why. Counting the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, they've all.
We're looking for America here, Will the conservative takeover mean the end of America, at least the end of American democracy? Is this the end of our institutions? Is the destruction of government? $7.2 trillion in debt. I went on the government website this morning. This is from publicdebt.treas.gov. This is the Treasury Department's website, www.publicdebt.treas.gov. And then there's an interest expense on the debt outstanding. So you put /OPD/OPDINT.htm. You can find it off the public debt main website. And here is how much we are paying. And when I say we, I mean we, because this is coming out of your paycheck and mine. Here is how much we are paying on the interest on the federal debt. The federal debt, which was just run up by over $1 trillion to pay for George Bush's tax cut. In the month of December, we paid $84,988,921,666.59. In the month of January, we paid $13,163,133,814.72. In February, we paid $15,835,291,826.89. In March, $13,418,109,210.36. And in April, the last month that the Treasury is reporting, we paid $14,060,171,915.01. For a total for this fiscal year of $174 billion. And then the chump change of an additional $695,193,948.71. $174 billion that you and I are paying interest on. In 2002, it totaled out $332 billion. In 2001, $359 billion. It was actually down in 2002. And over 2001, and it was down in 2001 over 2000, it was down in, there had been a decline there as a result of the Clinton years, but then now it's coming back up again. It is exploding. Will the conservative takeover mean the end of democracy? Are we going to suck this government dry so that no other country will invest, no other people will invest in our stocks and bonds, our government debt? Are we wiping out the institutions of the United States? The Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798, in some ways it's like deja vu all over again, reading history. Here in our chat room, we've got, it looks like 9 or 10 people in there right now, and a couple of comments. One person says, I do think there's a lot of greed going on out there with the conservative agenda, though it's not talked about. Another says, they want the government out of their business, but by God, they certainly want the government in your bedroom, your medicine cabinet, etc., ad nauseum. Another person says, do you think we should be making laws generated so corporations can make more profit? Another person responds, it's a world turned upside down. Another one says, hell no, that seems absurd. And another one says, I think corporations should make profit, but not at the expense of people. And the comments in our chat room right now, if you'd like to join that group, just go to tomhartmann.com, TomHartmann.com, and click on the radio show link, and then click on the chat room link on the radio show page. Our question, will a conservative takeover mean the end of democracy? The number here, 1-800-TALK, yes, 1-800-825-5937. Judy in Chi-Town wants to talk about the debt. Welcome, Judy, to the Tom Hartmann Program.
It has taken over our democracy.
Say that again, Judy?
The debt has already taken over our democracy.
Well, it's the second biggest bill that we pay behind defense. We pay a little over $400 billion a year for defense, and we pay a little over $230 billion a year for interest on the debt, or over $320 billion, excuse me, for interest on the debt. And then the next biggest expense is as I recall, well, I don't remember the breakout of the categories, but it's just in the neighborhood of around $40 billion. I mean, these two are the big ones.
As you said on the website that Grover Norquist has this plan, it seems like he's ahead of his 20-year plan in destroying our federal government.
Yeah.
And I can't understand why the media, why the people, especially the Democrats, aren't saying that it's in black and white. That is the aim of our president, to destroy the economy of this country. And who makes that, who gets that money, that interest money that's being paid back? The big banks that are making the loans.
Well, not just the banks. Most of that interest money goes to individuals who hold government debt, which is mostly very wealthy individuals in the United States and overseas.
Name Bush.
Well, yeah, I'm sure his family has a lot of money in public debt. The benefit of public debt is that it is free of state and local taxes.
The other thing that worries me is the British have no debt, and they're probably loaning us money.
Yes.
And we're just going into debt, and yet Europe is not going into debt. I find this very strange.
Well, the Europeans know something about economics.
Right.
We have an administration right now that fired all the economists from its economic team and replaced them with attorneys and PR people.
I guess Yale should wonder about their MBA Bush that they put out into society, that he can't balance a checkbook.
Well, you know, to Yale's defense, we have to point out that George Bush's average score in college was 74, so I don't think that he's necessarily an example of the quality of students that Yale can produce.
There's some people that can't even get into Yale because they don't have a high enough average.
Well, he couldn't have if he didn't have affirmative action for rich white people.
Right.
Otherwise known as legacy programs.
I guess people just... What's the difference between a million and a billion and a trillion? It doesn't seem to affect them.
Yeah, I think that's one of the problems, Judy, and excellent points you make, and I appreciate your calling in. Thank you very much. This is one of the big issues, I think, is that people don't understand the numbers. You know, they say, well, it's $1 billion. What's $1 billion? Well, it's 1,000 million, but what does that mean in the context of government? It's $1 trillion. People go, well, what's $1 trillion? You know, how do you make that meaningful? And that's where I tried to come up with that. If the government decided to give away $1 million, they could give it away to 1 million people. And that would be $1 trillion. It would be interesting to find out, if you were to take 1 million and divide it into 365 days, how many people each day... Maybe some of you who are mathematicians out there can do this real quick and let me know. How many people each day would win $1 million in a government lottery if the government decided to give away $1 trillion, roughly the amount of the combined 2002 and 2003 George Bush tax cuts? Will the conservative takeover mean the end of democracy? In 1798, John Adams, who some would suggest is one of the godfathers of the Republican Party. Back then they were called the Federalists, and the Federalists, in the wake of scandals and Thomas Jefferson getting the word out, just disintegrated in the 1820s and 1830s, and they were replaced by the Whigs, who then disintegrated in the 1840s and were replaced by what are now called the Republicans. In the meantime, back then, when the first party to split off from the Federalists in the 1780s, were the Democratic Republicans. There was a group called the Republicans and a group called the Democrats, and Thomas Jefferson brought them together into one group that he called the Democratic Republicans, which, it's interesting, 3 or 4 years ago, reading government websites, you would see Jefferson identified as a Democrat in places all over the place. You know, Democrat, Jefferson the Democrat, or Jefferson who founded the Democratic Republicans, now known as the Democrats. But now when you look at the conservative websites and you look at many of the government websites, the whitehouse.gov sites and whatnot, Jefferson is identified as a Republican. Well, anyway, it was called the Democratic Republicans, and then later on in the 1830s they dropped the word Republican and just called themselves the Democrats. John Adams, who was the grand old Federalist and some would say the godfather of the Republican Party, promoted and signed into law the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798. These were four laws that were the 1798 version of the USA Patriot Act. They changed the number of years that a person had to wait for citizenship in the United States from 4 to 15, as I recall. They changed, and they made it illegal. They made it a crime for people to speak out against the government. This was the main event that drove a wedge between Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, and the reason why they didn't speak to each other for another 20 years. Jefferson, when Adams was going to sign this piece of legislation, and keep in mind, Thomas Jefferson at the time was the Vice President of the United States. Jefferson got in his car, or in his carriage, and drove off. He refused to be in Washington, D.C. on the day that John Adams signed this piece of legislation. Now, interestingly, in several of the recent biographies, histories of John Adams, written by good Republicans who show pictures of themselves with George Bush on their websites, one of which is a major bestseller, they don't talk about the Alien and Sedition Acts. This was the single, in fact, on page 505 of McCullough's book, John Adams, he says, he deals with it in just a very short form and says Adams never enforced the Alien and Sedition Acts, as if this was just like no big deal. And, you know, you read the book and you just don't get any idea about what was really going on back then. What was really going on was that this thing split the country. The reason Thomas Jefferson became president was because of the Alien and Sedition Acts. David in San Francisco, you wanted to talk about the tax cut. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program. David in San Francisco.
I'm in propaganda. Hi, Tom. Did I just finally click in there?
Yeah, I think it took a second for all those switches and electronics and whatnot to work.
Okay,
welcome to the program.
With the internet, I don't get to hear you for another 5 minutes anyway. So.
Uh-huh.
Hey, so I was interested in the propaganda about, you know, how they're able to pull these scams off, like giving tax cuts to the rich, and essentially their theme is that the rich are too poor to pay taxes, and that the poor are too rich to get anything from their government. So no services to the poor, no services to the poor, and that the poor, poor rich are paying too much taxes. You know,
well, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, here's the philosophical underpinning of that, David, and it is coherent. I mean, I'm not saying that these people are hypocrites or that they don't have a coherent philosophy. They have a very coherent and clear philosophy that they articulate. And the underpinning philosophy is that the government has no business involving itself in redistribution of wealth. That if people earn money, they should keep it, period. And that if people don't earn money, tough. They have a moral defect. This comes out of the old Calvinist notion which was very pervasive in North America in the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, that wealth is a sign of divine blessing. That people who are wealthy are blessed by God. And it go back over the years, over the centuries, over the millennia, the idea that people who are wealthy are blessed by the gods. This was an idea that the Greeks carried, the Romans had, and on it goes. So the practical considerations of, well, what kind of society do you want to live in, as Thomas Jefferson raised these issues and said, you know, the purpose of government, good government, the main purpose of government is to provide for health, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, explicitly, that government actually should play a role in how these things go on. So I think that's what's up with them.
Well, you can also see the fallacy to their, or let's say the big lie to their theme. You know, I don't disagree with what you just, how you just laid it out, because the big lie that goes along with that is that if I understand right, Jesus has a passage about whether or not it's okay for the poor to drink. Jesus says, don't begrudge a poor man for getting drunk, but you cannot have the rich, I'm going to have to paraphrase here, but the rich don't have any right to get drunk, because if they've taken on this mantle of managing all of our lives, then they have no opportunity. They have to be on duty 24 hours a day and manage our lives. You know, they don't have any right to get drunk. And so,
yeah.
You know, we can always force the rich to pick and choose whether they want to be either rich or whether they want to have a life. And there's a huge fallacy in this because, as you were talking about it, is from the Calvinist viewpoint, if you go back to Moses, Moses, of course, with his usury laws, laid it out that money was not alive and that it was a creation of human beings. Thereby, money is not alive. It cannot have children. And
right,
if
and
money
it
cannot
labor.
Have children, then you know it's you cannot give life to a dead thing. And so
yes.
to give life both politically, you're to allow the rich to have more than one vote is not the American way. To give corporations the right to have votes, to give corporate money spending, money power, the right to buy legislation, is giving more than one vote. It's not one man, one vote. It's one corporation. And if money is not necessarily created by God, then it's not necessarily clean. And so
right.
if it's not clean, you can have dirty money go into a corporation. You can have clean money go into a corporation. Doesn't make any difference. And
right.
so when you have dirty money buying legislation, you're not having honest government. And so
well, you could say that, David, you could say the same about dirty money that people make. But I think that you're the really important point that you make and that people really need to get as we're coming up against a break here. But is that corporations have inserted themselves into the political process by claiming personhood back to 1886, that our founders never intended for that, that that's not the way it historically was in America. It's not the way it should be. And we need to get corporations out of the political process to clean it up and restore democracy in the United States. Stick around. We'll be right back.
So the sun is a-shining, the birds are a-chirping, and the garden is a-calling. One small problem, you're back.
Ow!
It's a-hurting. Can't bend down to dig.
Ooh!
Can't stand up to water.
Ouch.
Just can't bear the pain. Better grab a Thermacare. 8 hours of penetrating heat for powerful pain relief and deep muscle relaxation.
Ah.
So you can bend, dig, plant, water, water, and water all you want. No problem. Pick up a Thermacare and wrap yourself in relief.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please hang up.
Having a hard time connecting with someone who cares? Try the Boys Town National Hotline at 1-800-448-3000. They'll be there to help you when you need it the most. 24 hours a day. They'll even pay for the call. Simply call 1-800-448-3000.
Boys Town National Hotline, how can I help?
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
What's the one key ingredient missing from the relief of allergies that hurt? The pain reliever in Advil. Yes, Advil. New Advil Allergy Sinus is a one-of-a-kind formula that takes the pain out of allergies in a whole new way. A recent study showed that when Advil is combined with its allergy medicine, you get better relief of your worst allergy symptoms, all with less of the medicine that makes you drowsy. Advance to new Advil Allergy Sinus and stop allergies that hurt.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky.
We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to ieamericaradio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We have Matt in Louisiana and Preston in Denver on the phone. 1-800-TALK-YES, they both called. We'll take your call, Matt, and Preston, we'll see. Hopefully we'll have time to get to you here. We've got about 3 minutes left in this segment before the top of the hour, but then we'll carry up. Hey, Matt, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for your show. I love liberal radio, man. It's keeping us
thank
alive.
You. Okay. I call it the radical middle, Matt. I really think that the word liberal has been so abused and trashed and just redefined that I'm wary of it. But anyway,
it's kind of a loaded term. I think we have to revive it, though.
Yeah, probably.
That's what I'm trying to do. Because
good.
You're right. We've been trashed. We've been hollered at, put down, and it's
vilified.
Terrible.
Yeah.
What I wanted to say is I really appreciate you bringing up the Founding Fathers, and I wonder, could you do a whole show on it? Is there any way you could get the word out about that?
About John Adams and the Sedition Act?
About John Adams and the Founding Fathers, because most of us do not remember that what we were taught in school, if at all, and most people just don't know about what the Founding Fathers were about.
And most schools aren't teaching this stuff. I mean, this is how you could have a history of John Adams, become a New York Times bestseller, and not mention and not deal with in detail the Alien and Sedition Acts, which was probably the single largest event of his entire presidency.
Yeah.
And the thing that, I mean, the Alien and Sedition Acts were not even repealed until 1964 by the United States Supreme Court. Yes, we're going to be dealing with this, Matt, in answer to your question. We'll be dealing with it more and more and more as we go over time. It's an area that I'm very close to. I'm writing another book right now on these topics called The Athens Experiment, which will be out next year from Random House. And so I'm up to my eyeballs in this kind of research right now. Matt, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it, and appreciate your feedback. Preston is in Denver, wants to talk about the concept of the rich earning money. Welcome to the program, Preston.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, my pleasure. They always talk about earning their money, but people like Bill Gates Sr., and responsible wealth talk about how dependent they were upon this society for his son to make all his billions of dollars. I mean, computers, that was public subsidy and research at our universities. And if not for us, they wouldn't be gaining all those billions of dollars.
Exactly. You're exactly right, Preston. That music means that we've come up against the top of the hour, but I thank you for your comments and appreciate your calling in. If you wanted to continue that call, just call back. Stick around. We'll be back soon in just a few minutes. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day.
You You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. President Bush says he will now meet with Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon and new Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas in Jordan next week. Outside the State Department earlier today, Secretary of State Colin Powell said that three-way meeting would give both sides a chance to express their views directly to the president on his latest Middle East peace proposal.
I think such a meeting would certainly demonstrate the U.S. commitment to moving forward with the peace process.
Secretary Powell said he's also still looking for a strong statement from the new Palestinian prime minister denouncing terrorist activities. British Prime Minister Tony Blair, meanwhile, is now on his way to Kuwait, where he's due to meet with top leaders for the next 2 days. And correspondent Suzanne Chislett says he could also make another stop in the Middle East and South Asia on the trip.
Tony Blair becomes the most senior figure to visit Kuwait since the war against Iraq. He will meet senior dignitaries to thank them for their assistance on behalf of the coalition. Concerns about ongoing terrorist activity and instability in the region are also likely to be central to talks. There's speculation that Mr. Blair may also visit Iraq to thank British troops working on construction there. Later this week, he'll visit Poland and Russia ahead of the start of the G8 summit in Evian. Suzanne Chislett, London.
Ministers from the Islamic world, meanwhile, are gathered in Tehran, Iran, for the Organization of the Islamic Conference. Talks are expected to focus on rebuilding Iraq. Syrian Foreign Minister Farouk al-Sharaa says the new Iraqi government needs to be representative of all the people there.
It must be broadly presenting all spectrum, political spectrum in Iraq, all ethnic and religious groups. The purpose is to preserve the unity and territorial integrity of Iraq.
Other attendees at that conference include Turkish Foreign Minister Abdullah Gül and Arab League Secretary General Amir Musa.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief, Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue, without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen. We're having a hard time party training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You're kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
The Secretary General of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries says that cartel could consider decreasing output in order to keep oil prices within the $22 to $28 per barrel range. OPEC will be meeting June 11th in Qatar to make a decision on its production policy. OPEC has also invited rival exporters to that conference in Doha to examine ways to guarantee income stability for all oil producers worldwide. Oil prices fell from recent five-week highs today as traders eye the return of Iraqi exports following the war.
John, there's something I must tell you. I want to be free.
Oh, Helen, you want to be free with the wind in your hair, life without care?
No, I want to be free of those overnight laxatives that give me cramps.
You want Freelax, the only overnight laxative that gives you stimulant-free, cramp-free relief in just two caplets.
Oh, John, I just wish everything could be that dependable.
Freelax is the free of everything you hate about laxatives. Laxative, look for it in the bright green box. Use only as directed.
An intensive manhunt is now over in Atlanta with the arrest of Derek Todd Lee, who is wanted as a suspect in the murder so far of five women in Louisiana. A story from correspondent Don Dornberg.
In the words of Atlanta Police Chief Richard Pennington, the suspect, Derek Todd Lee, knew he was a wanted man. Minutes before his arrest, Lee offered to buy a woman a drink. That woman, wishing to remain anonymous, says Lee said he was just tired and ready to get away. Police apparently were very close to an arrest over the past day, once at a homeless shelter and once at a rundown motel where Lee stayed. A call that Lee allegedly made on the motel manager's cell phone helped provide clues as to his whereabouts. Don Dornberg, Atlanta.
Lee earlier today appeared in court and waived an extradition hearing. He's charged with the rape and murder of a Louisiana State University student. Police in Louisiana are calling the arrest now, quote, bittersweet. During a news briefing earlier, Baton Rouge Police Chief Pat Englade said he's proud the individuals and agencies that worked together on the case did their very best. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Kids fight over toys, and mom says share. Good advice for the playground and the road. When I come back, we'll talk peaceful coexistence between cars and motorcycles.
We're at the track asking drivers why they recommend Champion Platinum Power spark plugs. Here comes Matt Kenseth and his Ford. Matt, why do you trust Champion? He said Champion provides long-lasting power. Here comes Dale Earnhardt Jr. and his Chevy. Dale said Champion has the right technology. So use Champion in your car no matter what make it is. Champion, the world's favorite spark plug. What'd he say?
Get new Champion Platinum Power spark plugs at a leading auto parts store or retailer near you.
Global detente's important, but drivers of four-wheel vehicles and two-wheeled motorcycles could use some local negotiation in sharing the road. Here's a start. Cyclist, act like full-sized vehicles by claiming road space nearer centerline, encouraging drivers to pass with a wider berth. Four-wheeled vehicles, don't move to one side to see what's going on in slow traffic. Stick to the middle of your lane. This position discourages cyclists from weaving between cars. Now that's shuttle diplomacy. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us. Brought to you by Champion, the world's favorite spark plug.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
The water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast, streaming on the internet on IEAmericaRadio.com and picked up later in the day on RadioPower.org and also on Sirius Satellite, channel 145. We're here. We're on the air. We're live. And if you'd like to call, 1-800-TALK-YES is the number. We have Preston from Denver and Mac in Santa Fe. Preston, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. This is I took a day off of work today, and I don't get you at work, so I want to make this last point.
Great.
The conservatives talk about what a crime it is. They cite Karl Marx talking about the redistribution of funds.
Yes.
But they do it, and they just redistribute it upwards all the time. And
yes.
We have to press that point. And I think we hesitate sometimes to press that point because of the fear. And you talked about the Alien and Sedition Acts, but I think in this period, they use a lot of psychological warfare to keep mm-hmm. us quiet. I mean, the public relations industry, an American invention, has been at it for decades to try to keep us cowed and quiet. And in fact, one of its founders, Edward Bernays, who was a nephew of Sigmund Freud, said, If we understand the mechanism and motives of the group mind, it is now possible to control and regiment the masses according to our will without their knowing it.
Yeah, this is one of the guys who brought us World War One.
That's right. And he was also involved in Guatemala and very bloody events in that country, and selling cigarettes to the country, and a lot of destructive endeavors. And I think as soon as we reveal it, though, and as soon as we begin to see how public relations works, I think we're in a better position to defend ourselves. And I think PR can be a good thing. I mean, if you're promoting healthy food, organic food, and good programs like IE America, I think it can be useful. But
thank you, Preston.
We need to be aware of its working.
You know, and I think one of the problems with PR in a universe of limited media options is that the ability to get a message out depends in large part on the message. We had this situation a few months ago where one of these groups was trying to run anti-tax cut ads, and Cox Communications refused to run the ad in the Phoenix market because they didn't like it.
That's a real problem for sure. But the corporate media, even, there are openings. I think one of them are the call-in talk shows. Sometimes you're going to get in battles with the host, but I have to give them credit. They'll give dissenters time to make their case.
And some
also,
of them will.
Some.
Many of them have call screeners.
Yeah, Limbaugh and Michael Savage are complete cowards, but Michael Medved and Dennis Prager are fair. And I think letters to editors, I think, you know, our positions aren't fringy at all. I think a lot of people are into this kind of radical information. I mean, Howard Zinn sold a million copies of A People's History, and Noam Chomsky is the most cited living author on the planet. And I think we could do a better job of increasing our profile.
I agree. Don't be afraid to speak out. And you know, Michael Moore is still on the New York Times bestseller list.
Exactly.
It's good points, Preston. Thank you for the call. You know, here on the Tom Hartman program, we do press those points, and I appreciate your calling in. Mac in Santa Fe, welcome to the Tom Hartman program, and thank you for calling 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hello.
Hey.
Yeah, this is Mac.
What's up, Mac?
Oh, kind of frustrated. All the talk show hosts like you and Mike Malloy and Pete Weber and a few others can lay out a laundry list of what's wrong. But no, I don't hear anybody blowing the trumpets or waving the banner to rally us and find out, figure out ways to close ranks.
Yeah, that's a good point, and we do need a positive vision, and I've been on this show for the last few weeks trying to promote a positive vision of what America can be. Yeah, apparently I haven't been doing enough of it, and I'll have to do a lot more. I think that without, you know, that any motivation strategy always has to have two components. It has to have a moving away from pain part and a moving toward pleasure part. That we know, that's what we don't want, but we also have to know, this is what we do want. And I very strongly believe that we want democracy. We want a government of, by, and for we, the people, voters, not corporations. The people who participate in democracy are the ones who should be governing it.
I'd love it if we could come to agreement. I'm going to get in touch with the folks here in New Mexico, Senator, Representative, and I think I'm going to lay it on the line. If you can't or won't get some guts, I'm going to find somebody to vote for who does have guts.
Yeah.
And I'll vote for them and get you birds out of there.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying that, and it's one of the reasons why there are a lot of Greens and progressives who are saying that if Ralph Nader runs again for president, that they're not going to vote for the Democrat, that they're going to vote Green again, even if it means George Bush becomes president again on a minority ticket. And this is a big concern for the Democrats, and it's a message that I hope they hear, because there are people out there who are putting out positive visions.
One of the messages I hope we can get across to the conservatives and anybody else who maybe don't want to listen is that when we go down, we're all going to go down together.
That's right. We're all on this ship.
Yeah, that's including the rich and the poor and the in-between.
Yeah. And in fact, that's the strongest argument for many of the social programs that Jefferson wrote about, that some of which were actually put into place back in the 17th, in the 18th century, that came in and then went out during the 19th century and then came in strong with Roosevelt in the 20th century, is that they enhanced the quality of life for all Americans. The Roosevelt's New Deal was largely responsible for the creation of the American middle class. The American middle class was a relatively new phenomenon. And it came about as the result, in large part, of the New Deal, of an actual redistribution of wealth program where they said, okay, we're going to tax the very rich, and we're going to provide a social safety net for the very poor, and we're going to create something in the middle. And people say, well, I would never take welfare, but they took the GI Bill. They say, well, I'd never take welfare, but they take the tax deduction on their mortgage payments.
Well, you're talking to a guy who cast his first ballot, his first vote, and I helped put FDR in for his second term.
God bless you.
So I lived through some of that, and I remember it. And by God, that there were a lot of people, rich and poor. I remember a banker friend of our family who showed up one day telling us that he had been fired from his bank job because they were going broke. Mm-hmm. And he was sweaty, and he didn't look so good as he used to.
Yeah,
and if we go down, we're going to go down together, joined in hands, I'm sure. I'm becoming incoherent. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I appreciate your call, Mac, and I understand and I agree. Since in tribute to Mac, since he voted for FDR, let me just share with you two paragraphs from FDR's acceptance speech in 1936 when he was nominated for his second term to be President of the United States. This is the term that Mac voted for. He said, this is FDR in 1936 in, June 27th, 1936. He said, today we stand committed to the proposition that freedom is no half-and-half affair. If the average citizen is guaranteed equal opportunity in the polling place, he must have equal opportunity in the marketplace. These economic royalists complain that we seek to overthrow the institutions of America. What they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power. And then Roosevelt continued, he said, our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of this kind of power. In vain they seek to hide behind the flag and the Constitution. In their blindness they forget what the flag and the Constitution stand for. As always, now and always, they stand for democracy, not tyranny. For freedom, not subjection, and against a dictatorship by mob rule, and against a dictatorship by the overprivileged alike. Thanks, Mac. I really appreciate your comments. Lillian in Anderson, Alabama, has called 1-800-TALK-YES. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program, Lillian.
How you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you?
I'm doing very well. I'd like to give a little some suggestions how to fight and get a good president.
Okay.
Vote on a good president. You know, we need a way of getting together the ordinary common citizens who believe the way we do. We need to form some kind of a think tank. I got some suggestions here.
Great. What are they?
Okay. We need another source of energy.
I agree.
What the government refused to do, we must do for ourselves.
Yep.
Government must be for the people, not for the very rich corporations. On election day, an honest vote count, verified and protected. Real
yes.
Democrats, independents, Greens, must work together against the wicked professional Watergate crooks who are trying to destroy us, this country, the world.
You're right.
Charity starts at home. Justice and freedom, independence for the people, working, middle class, poor. Form a think tank, plan, act effectively. Destroy the wickedness inside and out. Get our civil liberties back. Justice and freedom. Some relief.
Okay. Great points, Lillian.
Yes.
Great points.
We need to see ordinary people would like to get together and you know, but we need a place to form, how to get organized,
yeah,
how to start.
A friend of mine, Rob Call, on
we must
the
start
op-ed
something.
News. Yeah,
you know, we must start making sure they don't do what they did the last time. we need an honest vote count, you know. Put our foot down.
You mean the,
this is
the,
like a tactic.
You mean the crime in Florida.
This is like
where they threw 70,000 voters off the rolls.
This is like what we're in is like a cactus. Only way you keep on touching the cactus and not trying to destroy it, like you got to punch it out. And we got to, like, if you know what's at stake, is our life.
Yeah.
I.
This is the future of American democracy we're talking about here, Lillian.
Yes, I see there the front of my poem. I wrote this poem, and I'm ridiculing the Watergate mindset. They, you know, Bush crime family financed Hitler, our regime. That's what Mike Malloy said.
Yeah, and I would say that they weren't alone in that. So it's I'm not sure that creating and pointing to specific villains is as useful as identifying the mindsets behind those villains.
No, but I'm saying the same mindset of controlling and killing us. See, I've been a warrior underground fighting the system and doing outrageous, crazy things to me, and I stood up to them, and I got victory each time they did something outrageous to me.
That's
because
great.
I put my neck on the line. I didn't care. See, I see myself, if when they get us, they're going to get the top first. They're going to get the most threatening people first.
I understand, and I'm right there with you, Lillian. We're up against a break here, the tyranny
of
the clock.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. I appreciate your calling in. 1-800-TALK, yes. 1-800-825-5937. Stick around. We'll return right after this break.
James Carver here to talk to you about something that's finer than frog hair, something that really puts the pepper in the gumbo. I'm talking about InPhone, people, a new telephone service that takes 411 and adds a whole lot of giddy-up. Just call 888-411-1111 and you get an operator who will fetch you phone numbers, movie times, driving directions, restaurant reservations. How does that grab you, fella? Let me say that number once more, 888-411-1111. InPhone, how can we help you?
Only 89 cents for any call up to 15 minutes. Only 5 cents a minute after that. Your first 5 calls are free.
This message is brought to you from American Atlantic Financial Corporation. Doesn't it pique your interest to discover how profits could potentially be made in markets like sugar, coffee, gold, foreign currencies, grains, unleaded gasoline, heating oil? Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive a free video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities at no cost or obligation by just dialing toll-free 1-888-247-8400. That's 1-888-247-8400. American Atlantic Financial Corporation specializes in identifying undervalued opportunities and brings them to qualified investors. Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive our latest recommendation. For your free investor's kit and video, call Power, Performance, and Possibilities. Call toll-free 1-888-247-8400. The call is free. The video is free by just dialing 1-888-247-8400. Futures and options involve significant risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone.
As a child, I spent a lot of time at the big
office building
just reading books. My mom insisted I stay in
the highway on-ramp
to finish my education. So she dropped me off the
office building
before going to her second job. She didn't want me working at
vacant lot
like my dad.
When we lose a historic place, we lose a part of who we are. To learn how you can help protect places in your community, visit nationaltrust.org. History is in our hands. A message brought to you by the National Trust for Historic Preservation and the Ad Council.
Rural people and local officials have long complained to the Environmental Protection Agency about the sickening air and water pollution coming from the massive corporate hog factories that have sprung up all across the country. And now, by gollies, George W. Bush's EPA is listening to the polluters. These hog factories are huge, cramming tens of thousands of hogs inside and channeling hog urine and feces into open-air cesspools the size of football fields. Oh, the stink. Think of rancid roadkill mixed with overloaded porta-potty on a hot day. It's a knee-buckling, mind-melting, pass-out stink. But the stench is not just an odor. It's a substance. In particular, it's fecal dust. And hundreds of tons of these invisible hog stuff particles drift through the air for residents of the area to breathe. Scientific studies now are proving that the stink is poisonous, ruining people's health. Instead of enforcing existing laws or enacting stronger protections for people, however, the Bushites closeted themselves with industry lobbyists, privately negotiating on a proposal written by the polluters themselves. Hold your nose, because the plan agreed to by Bush and Company is even stinkier than hog stuff. One, the corporate hog factories are to be given amnesty for any past violations of the Clean Air Act, even violations that poison people. Two, the EPA will pursue no new cases against polluters, and control of factory farm pollution will be moved from EPA's enforcement professionals to its political office. Three, in exchange for this get-out-of-jail-free card, the industry agrees to have its pollution monitored by EPA on a voluntary basis. But only 30 of the thousands of hog factories will be monitored, and even if they're found to be rank violators of the law, they'll not have to make changes in their practices. This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight bush stink, call Grace Factory Farm Project at 212-726-9161.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Don't be afraid. We can create a democracy that works in the United States. We have in the past. We can do it again. It's just a matter of getting the theocrats and the corporatists out of the way and allowing true, what used to be called statesmen. I don't know if there's a gender-neutral way of saying that, in. Mac called back and said, Giller, give him hell, Tom. Thank you, Mac. I appreciate that. You know, Harry Truman, they said, one of the reporters once asked Harry Truman, or made the comment, he said, Harry, you're really giving him hell today. And Harry said, no, it just makes him seem, you know, feel like it. My hope is to give people heaven. I'd like to say, you know, this is what we can have. This is what democracy can be. We really can have a country that works. We have the extraordinary thing about America is that we are the holders of the sacred archetype. We are the ones. I mean, this is the land where it was born in 1776. It had appeared in little bits and pieces here and there in Greece for a couple of hundred years, in Athens, but it wasn't really the kind of representative democracy we have here. They didn't have voting in Athens, for example. It was basically a jury pool type of system. It has appeared here and there, but this is it. And in 86, as I recall, no, it must maybe it was 86 anyhow. The Tiananmen Square protesters, 15,000 people marched, many of them to their death, most of them to their imprisonment, carrying a 36-foot tall papier-mâché replica of the Statue of Liberty that they had renamed the Goddess of Democracy. We can bring the Goddess of Democracy back to life. You know, there was sometime back, I was reading a newspaper and I saw this thing, Columbia Dies Over Texas. Columbia is the goddess that was created by the founders to be the Goddess of America. There's a 19.5-foot tall statue of her on top of the Capitol building. She's been on our coins for years and years. She's what the Statue of Liberty is made of. She was given her own territory in the United States that would be separate from any other and not controlled by any state government. It's called the District of Columbia. And, yeah, I think that Texas, in some ways, is being very harmful to Columbia now, but I don't think she's died yet. I think she's still alive and well, and there's still hope. The old man in the mountain has fallen off the face of the mountain in New Hampshire. New Hampshire is going down the tubes right now. I'm president of the board of directors of a community for abused children there in a private school in New Hampshire, and we are the state is just struggling to pay for those children who are most desperately in need. And the symbolism is just, it's just all over the place. It's just incredible. Has modern society grown beyond the death penalty? I think this is an important question, and I'd like to spend some time with it in the rest of the program here. Our quote for the hour from Edward R. Murrow, we must not confuse dissent with disloyalty. When the loyal opposition dies, I think the soul of America dies with it. If you'd like to be on the program today, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES, and we have a whole bunch of folks in the chat room, tomhartman.com. Click on the radio show and then click on the chat room. It'll take you there. The death penalty. This comes into the news today because there is a town in North Carolina, Thomasville, a blue-collar town known for its furniture factories, And this town has just passed a resolution calling for a moratorium on the death penalty. Thomasville, North Carolina is one of 21 different municipalities in North Carolina that has passed similar laws or resolutions asking that the state have declare a moratorium on death penalties. The South has accounted for 700 out of the 854 executions in the United States since 1976, when the U.S. Supreme Court lifted the ban on the death penalty. The majority of those executions have taken place in the state of Texas. Two recent cases in North Carolina where prosecutorial misconduct was demonstrated and people were taken off death row because it was demonstrated that they were improperly, unreasonably sentenced to the death penalty, have really raised this issue. And we're going to get into what are the arguments for and against the death penalty. I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. Stick with us. We'll be right back after this break.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
People are trying to stop the spread of insects and disease without stopping international trade. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Wooden pallets are used in shipping to move freight around the world. These wooden platforms are important for trade, but they often carry more than their intended cargo. Beetles, worms, fungus, and bacteria are just some of the organisms that ride around on pallets. In one case, researchers examined a single pallet and discovered nearly 30 different kinds of insects. Carrie Britton is a forest pathologist with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. She says the wood that's used for pallets often comes from trees that already had been weakened by insects or disease.
There's probably billions of pallets that move around each year with very inferior wood. And sometimes the reason those trees died too young to become anything but a pallet is because they had insects or diseases.
Imported diseases and pests have caused serious economic and environmental damage around the world. Britton says people are looking for ways to fight this problem.
The regulatory community all over the world realize that this is a major problem, and they're working on trying to develop regulations and ways of requiring that the wood be treated either with heat or fumigants like methylbromide.
Britton says modern transportation helps foreign organisms survive the trip between continents.
They can travel across the ocean. We have such rapid transit now that they arrive still alive, and they just crawl out and look for a new home.
Pallets are not the only problem. Invasive species sometimes travel in wood chips and other wood that's used for packing material. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
We'll be right back.
best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We have grown, although our love is still special. Let's take a chance and fly away somewhere. The time, no one's to blame. I know time flies so quickly.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking about, has modern society grown beyond the death penalty? And broadly, over the last hour and a half, we've been talking about the fate of American democracy and modern society. Ralph in Atlanta has called 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Welcome to the program, Ralph.
Hey, welcome for putting me on.
You're welcome.
Just something kind of disturbing happened over the Labor Day weekend. I was in a discussion with a friend, you know, about how Bush wasn't elected, and that's a shame for a democracy and all that. And then he says, well, Ralph, don't you know, we never lived in a democracy. The United States is not a democracy. It's always a republic. So basically, the historical revisionism has gotten to the point where we deny that we even had the idealism of being a democracy.
Yeah.
You know, not acknowledging that Bush won, Bush didn't win the election. No, no, no. They say, oh, don't you understand, you silly dilly, this really wasn't a democracy all along. This is a republic. And
right.
And in republics, you know, it's the oligarchy that should rule.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And this, see, it's interesting, and I think important for people to understand the ideology of this, the background of this. Probably Neil Bortz in Atlanta is the guy who's been championing that in that for years. I know when we used to live in Atlanta, this was his big drumbeat. And a lot of it comes out of Newt Gingrich's redefining terms. When Gingrich got power, he understands the power of language and the power of framing. If you can identify the frame, if you can cause people to, in other words, instead of talking about tax cuts, you talk about tax relief. Instead of talking about fetuses, you talk about unborn children. Instead, you know, and on it goes. And so democracy sounds too much like Democrat to be a good word. So they decided we've got to change this to republic, which sounds more like Republican, and make that the good word. And there is some precedent for it. In 1787, in the Federalist Papers, James Madison was writing to, they were published in newspapers, a series of them, and most of them were written by Madison and Hamilton. A few were written by John Jay. And in Federalist Number 10, Madison goes on this long screed about how he's doing a sales pitch for the Constitution. He wants people to vote to ratify the Constitution. And he goes on this long screed about how a democracy is mob rule and a republic is rule by law. In other words, what's interesting is that prior to this date in 1787, the words democracy and republic had the exact same meaning in every dictionary in the United States and what became the United States and in England. You know, the English words democracy and republic were absolutely interchangeable. And Madison, wanting to differentiate the United States and make a sales pitch for the Constitution, said, a pure democracy is mob rule, the rule of the majority, and the problem is that the minority's rights are not protected. And so what we're doing, and see, England did not have a constitution, doesn't to this day. And so what he was trying to do was say, our constitutional system of government, if you guys will just ratify this thing, will be better than a democracy. And so he said, and so a republic, he redefined the word republic. He said a republic is where you have an instrument, the Constitution, that is unchangeable, that defines the boundaries so that the minorities will always be protected, even if it's against the will of the majority. And so he said, what we live in is not a democracy and it's not a republic. It's a democratic republic or a constitutional democratic republic or a constitutional republican democracy. And this led eventually, his throwing out these words in Federalist Number 10 is what led the breakaway groups from the Federalists in the 1790s to create the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and then Thomas Jefferson to bring them together into the party called the Democratic Republicans, which today we know of as the Democrats. So pardon the history lesson there, Ralph, but I think that that's really what's going on. And if you just educate people about that, hey, you know, we can use the word democracy. It still means something.
But
what do you think?
I really appreciated the history lesson. That's a lot of information. I didn't know that. So that's really cool to know. But it just seems that, like, whenever you discuss how the election was stolen, whenever you discuss democracy, it just seems that the debate has been reframed to make it sound like that was never our ideal at the first place. It's like Americans have so little knowledge of their own history and of their own ideals that whenever the government or the machine needs to rephrase a debate or rephrase an issue, it's very easy to reimpose a new sort of historical revisionism. And to claim that the United States was never democracy, and democracy is some sort of bad, wrong thing, I just kind of really hammers home the point in my mind that I really feel that democracy is dead as a concept, as an ideal. And I don't know. You know, Canada's looking better every day, frankly.
Well, don't give up, Ralph. We can take this country back. There is so much good and right about the United States. We certainly have our warts. We've made our mistakes. There's a lot that we've done wrong, and there are some absolutely, in my opinion, crazy people in positions of power in this country right now. And we have a system that's very badly broken with the corporate influence in the halls of government that we have to get out. But we've been there before. Teddy Roosevelt fought this fight. It was fought back against the Gilded Age, the populist rebellions. And Franklin Roosevelt certainly. And I think we can fight it again. I think that we can revive. What was her name? Columbia, the goddess of democracy, the explicit goddess of democracy. I think we can revive her. And you know, we know what the neocons are up to. Now we've got to figure out what we're up to and move forward with it.
I don't know. I wish I was as optimistic as you. But, you know, maybe, you know, the populists, you know, they had more than one or two newspapers to go to. The people who were
actually most of the newspapers back there during the populist era, Ralph, were very anti-populist. The populists produced their own. They were doing what the revolutionaries were doing, what Thomas Paine was doing. They were pamphleting. They were having a terrible time getting through, cracking through the voices through the what today we would call corporate dominated media. Back then it was mostly wealthy individuals who were very opposed to the populist movement, and so they had two principal things that they used, and these were the same two things that were used by the revolutionaries, by the founders, and that this was number one, pamphleteering, and number two, committees of correspondence. And the pamphleteering is self-explanatory, and today's pamphleting is the internet, your email box, and people are pamphleting constantly now, and it's waking people up. It's working again. And the committees of correspondence were groups who would write letters to the editor of newspapers, because in most newspapers they will allow letters to the editor that can conflict or contrast with the standard editorial line, if for no other reason than to appear to present balance. And it's really remarkable. One of the things that really surprised me when I first started hanging out with politicians years ago was that most senators and congresspeople actually read the letters to the, or their staff reads and summarizes for them, the letters to the editor in the newspapers in their district. That's probably the most well-read part of a newspaper for our elected officials of any other part. And so I encourage you to form committees of correspondence and write letters to the editor, actually write real physical letters and letters to your representatives expressing your opinions. These are the ways that this country has been taken back several times now, and these are the ways I think that we're going to have to do it again. And share the message of alternative media. Tell people about commondreams.org and opednews.com and buzzflash.com and this, you know, iamericaradio.com and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Makes
Thank
sense, Ralph?
Thank you very much. That's it gives me a little hope. Thank you much.
Good. Because I think without hope, there's nothing. I mean, Ralph, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. We must have hope. And it's not just, you know, like, gee, there's no option. We must have hope. Well, let's crank some up. There are millions of people in this country who understand the situation and who agree with our perspective. And their voices are not being heard. I mean, you watch Fox News and you get nothing but all right wing all day. You watch CNN and you get nothing but sort of moderate right wing all day. It seems that the message is not there. It seems like, you know, nothing is happening. But in reality, we're out there. We're alive and well. The death penalty cases make actually a really interesting point about this. There was... This is... where'd it go here? Ah, all opinion... This is great because this talks about public opinion polls, and I think it speaks to the issue that Ralph just raised when he called. This is... When you ask Americans if they're in favor of the death penalty, back 15 years ago, 80% said yes. Most recently, in 2001, an ABC News Washington Post poll in May of 2001 asked this question. They said, do you support the death penalty? 63% of Americans said yes. And that's the kind of very simplistic half question that gets asked, like, do you support George Bush? And you get these high percentages. But then when they came back and they asked the same people and other groups of people who they could compare it with, would you rather see the death penalty or life in prison without any possibility of parole? The support for the death penalty drops from 63% to 46%, and 45% favor life without chance of parole. And this is without any education. This is simply how you ask the question. So my experience in traveling around the country and talking with people, certainly doing this radio talk show, although I realize that I'm speaking to some extent to there's some self-selection here, that the people who listen to a program like this tend not to be Republicans, although I would love to hear from Republicans calling into the program. But what I'm getting when I travel around the country and talk to people, and I read the media and I read message boards and whatnot, and what you can see in our message board right now, we've got almost a dozen people in there at tomhartman.com, and go to the radio show and click on the chat room link, is that there is hope, there is enthusiasm, and there's a lot of anger and disgust at what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now. And, you know, you see the right-wing folks on the radio and on TV going, there's no way, Bush is here, he's a shoo-in. I think that there's still a long way to go and a great battle to be fought, politically speaking. And it's coming up. So our question for the last part of the show, has modern society grown beyond the death penalty? What are the arguments for and against the death penalty? The arguments against the death penalty, first of all, tend to be pragmatic by and large. And in fact, they tend to be science-based. From 1976 to 1996, the homicide rate was consistently around 10 people killed per 100,000 of the population. Or one out of every 10,000. The execution rate during that same period of time, from 76 to 96, went from zero to over 60 to around 60 per year. So, cranking back up executions in the United States did not change the homicide rate. A study by Thorsten Setlin in 1967 compared the homicide rates between neighboring states in which some had the death penalty and others did not. He also compared murder rates before and after states either abolished or reinstated the death penalty. And this exhaustive study that was done found no statistically valid difference in crime rates between states that had the death penalty and states that don't, states that reinstated it or states that didn't. In 1998, the United Nations commissioned an international study of the death penalty. And they concluded, and I quote, "This research has failed to provide scientific proof that executions have a greater deterrent effect than life imprisonment. Such proof is unlikely to be forthcoming. The evidence at whole still gives no positive support to the deterrent hypothesis." So where did the death penalty come from? Why do we have it? Why is it that the societies that are more grounded in biblical teachings, in Islam, tend to always have the death penalty, and the societies that seem more modern and well-developed almost universally don't? The United States is, as far as I know, the only industrialized modern country that has the death penalty. Well, I would suggest that it goes back to how this thing started, that in the old days, as it were, in biblical times and pre-biblical times, by and large, they didn't have prisons. I mean, when the Roman Empire took over Israel, they brought prisons with them, but there weren't prisons before that. And the prisons were few and far between, and local and rural communities didn't have the ability to imprison people. So they had to come up with some way of punishing criminals. So if you robbed something, they cut your hand off. If you raped somebody or had adultery, you get stoned. If you certain crimes, you get 100 lashes. Some crimes, you get 300 lashes. And if you killed somebody, they kill you. And it seemed to make sense because they didn't have prison as an option. And it was a brutal society to begin with. But most societies in the world have looked at this and said, well, we really don't want to live in a brutal society. And have moved beyond that, in my opinion. But what are the arguments in favor of the death penalty? Against it, since 1973, just a few interesting facts. Since 1973, more than 100 people have been freed from death rows because they were proven to be innocent in the United States. For every 7 people executed since 1976, 1 has been released because of innocence. Not just technicalities, innocence. The most far-reaching study of the death penalty in the United States, this is from pfadp.org, the most far-reaching study of the death penalty in the United States has found that 2 out of every 3 convictions were overturned on appeal, mostly because of serious errors by incompetent and underpaid defense lawyers or because of police and prosecutors who withheld evidence. So on the side of the death penalty, we have an interesting little clip here from, I think it was Tony Snow. Oh, no, Thomas Edelman in New American, that freedom shall not perish, a right-wing website, says fallacies of the anti-death penalty folks. Number one, the fallacy of racism. He says the death penalty is not racist. Number two, he says that most people on death row are white rather than black. Number two, cost. They point out that it costs more than $1.25 million to deal with the death penalty case, a lot more than life in prison. He says, well, this argument deserves no response. So I guess he's not arguing the cost one. We've got a few others here. We'll get back with them when we come back from this break. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be back in just a moment.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Every morning you send your kids out into a world filled with drugs, peer pressure, alcohol, even violence. How can you be sure they have the skills to find their way home safely? That they can make good decisions when you're not watching over them? This is Barry Williams, urging you to call the Girls and Boys Town National Hotline for help and advice at 1-800-448-3000. The call is free anytime, day or night. 1-800-448-3000. Just call. Your kids will be glad you did. Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
What's the one key ingredient missing from the relief of allergies that hurt? The pain reliever in Advil. Yes, Advil. New Advil Allergy Sinus is a one-of-a-kind formula that takes the pain out of allergies in a whole new way. A recent study showed that when Advil is combined with its allergy medicine, you get better relief of your worst allergy symptoms, all with less of the medicine that makes you drowsy. Advance to new Advil Allergy Sinus and stop allergies that hurt.
Do you want to own a computer but have less than perfect credit, bad credit? No problem. If you have a checking or savings account and can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved. Guaranteed. You heard right. You're approved for a brand new name brand computer. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now. If you can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, you're already approved. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now and tell us where you want your brand new name brand computer delivered. If you can afford $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, your brand new state-of-the-art PC will be on its way. Guaranteed. Bad credit, no problem. Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved for the computer of your dreams. Guaranteed. Call right now, 1-800-823-0157.
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
Drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
If we don't care and it shows.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk. Not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday. For Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to ieamericaradio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is still alive and well. Welcome back. We have been talking about democracy in America, about the death penalty, about the history of democracy, and the word republic, and Republicans, and Democrats, and all sorts of stuff. We got a whole bunch of folks in our chat room, lively discussion. I encourage you to check that out. And some great and interesting calls. I thank you all for those. Has modern society grown beyond the death penalty? I think this is a topic that perhaps we should go into at more length on a future show. But just some of the thought-provoking points. We no longer need to kill people to get them out of the way. The reality is that the death penalty emerged in societies that had no real means to deal with people who were so defective that they were irredeemable, except to either kill them or banish them. And banishing them might just cause them to become crazies in the woods who would represent a threat or a danger to hunting parties. And so they executed people. And this ancient system that got written into religious law and then became part of civil law is still with some societies. Only about half the countries in the world. The half that are democratic republics, with the singular exception of the United States, have banned the death penalty. They've said, we figured out better ways to do this. We don't need to be barbaric as a society in response to barbarism. And they've developed systems of life in prison without possibility of parole, things like this. And those societies that are still dictatorships, still banana republics, still strongman governments that bear little resemblance to democracy, still theocracies like Iran, kingdoms like Saudi Arabia, they still have the death penalty. Because it's a reflection of great power. So, have we grown beyond the death penalty in the United States? Are we ready to you know, is there a lesson we can learn from the rest of the world? I think this is a topic that's worth exploring in some future program. Thanks for being with us. I'd love to hear from you about the show. Any thoughts or suggestions, ideas you have, tom@tomhartman.com is my email. And we'll be back tomorrow. Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Thanks for joining us.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.